Thanks for listening to Reasonable Doubt on Podcast One.
I'm not sure if you've noticed, but it's definitely allergy season. I love spring, but I struggle with allergies, which are not the most fun. Luckily, with Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, I can say bring on the blooms and face allergies head on. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved, so you can attack watery eyes and battle runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. I'm obsessed with Kleenex. I always have a box of tissues nearby. I'm always carrying them in my purse. I feel like that prepared friend. But I do have allergies. You could probably hear it in my voice this time of year. You know, we're struggling out here, okay? But if I'm going to be rubbing this tissue on my face, you know, I have makeup on. I want it to be like soft and comfortable. I don't want to like be ripping up my nose. And that is why I love the Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, because they'd get the job done. They're non-irritating. They are just the go-to. I mean, doesn't everybody love Kleenex? I feel like I grew up using Kleenex. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Oh, we got a great Reasonable Doubt plan for you today. We take a deep dive into free speech, and I'm very passionate about it. And surprise, surprise. So is Garrigus. Also, fairly deep dive into the Central Park Five as well, with lots of revelations there. So that's coming in a second. First, 8sleep.com. Chronic sleep deprivation leads to depression, diabetes, obesity, cardiovascular disease. It is no bueno. We need 8 hours, or at least 7.5, so says the sleep doctor. One of the biggest problems, temperature. My whole life, I've been a hot sleeper. I sweat through my sheets and my mattress. My son's a hot sleeper. It's like a genetic thing. It's a problem, and it needs to be fixed. How many times you woke up and the comforter's all sweated through? So let's take care of it. The Pod by 8 Sleep. It is high-tech bed designed to achieve optimal sleep, developed by sleep researchers after tracking 43 million hours of sleep, combines dynamic temperature regulation, and it tracks your sleeping. So it learns your habits and adjusts the temperature automatically. It's so important to your health, and you can try it for 100 nights for free. If you don't love it, refund for the purchase, and they'll also arrange to pick it up. So if you don't love it, return it after 100 days, and they'll pick it up for free, and you get your money back. For a limited time, get $150 off your purchase. 8sleep.com/doubt, EIGHT, sleep.com/doubt. All right, let's go. Pluto TV, the leading free streaming television service. Watch over 100 channels and thousands of movies on demand completely free. Pluto TV never asks for a credit card. You don't even need to sign up to watch for free. Pluto TV is easy. It's completely legal. And it's the best way to watch your favorite TV shows and hit movies for free. You never pay for TV again by downloading Pluto TV. Not sure what you're waiting for. You can be rolling in a matter of moments. Download Pluto TV for free on all your favorite devices. Do it today, including your phone and Roku and Amazon Fire TV, Apple TV, Smart TVs, PlayStations, and anywhere else you stream. And also, don't forget about my channel, Chassis, C-H-A-S-S-Y, Chassis Channel number 501. It is the best. It is Pluto TV.
For just $25, you get wine and gifts. Ace's favorite stuff or products from ACS. Every single month, you get the drink you choose. It's hard to beat cool stuff and booze. Adam's Monthly Nut. Adam's Monthly Nut.
You heard Dick. It's time for the second month of Adam's Monthly Nut. This month's shipment includes a 3-pack of Gringo Bandito hot sauces from Offsprings, Dexter Holland. A pack of Herb and Lou's frozen ice cubes. One of Adam Carolla's unprepared balls. And, of course, a bottle of your choice. This $60 value is yours for only $25. Sign up for 1 month or keep the shipments coming. So prep your mail's box and get ready for Adam's Monthly Nut.
We'll be right back. This is Corolla Digital. This is Reasonable Doubt with your hosts, Mark Garagus and Adam Carolla.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get it on. No choice but to get on, mandate. Get on. Welcome to the best hour or so in the universe. It's Reasonable Doubt. I'm Adam Carolla. That's Mark Garagus. In parts unknown, although we will know in a second. Where are you, Mark?
When this drops, I will be in the city of Pittsburgh doing a reprisal of the Three Sleuths with Dr. Cyril Wecht and Dr. Henry Lee.
What does that mean?
Three Sleuths is, we talk about various cases when the three of us, Cyril is a world-renowned pathologist and talks about the JFK assassination, and Henry Lee, I think, rose to fame during the OJ trial was out of Connecticut and ran the crime lab and is a world famous forensic scientist. And he'll talk about probably OJ. And then I probably will do Peterson and Jackson. And we do the presentations and then kind of a little bit of a back and forth between us. We used to do it in Vegas as a Vegas show, which was hilarious. But now we just kind of take it on the road every once in a while and do it at a college.
Can I make this statement? Tell me what you think. When I was young, yes. True crime, the genre of true crime when I was young was all about men and women, and the women were being raped, and they had every magazine cover had a woman with her blouse torn open and a guy with the stiletto about to cut her bra on the middle strap. That was all. That's what true crime was, and women weren't so interested. Men were interested in it. There's probably a sexuality to it. Now, the true crime genre has exploded, and it seems to be exclusively women who are very interested in this subject.
You know, it's funny you say that, because I remember talking to an executive at one of these networks. I forget if it was ID or Discovery. And they were saying that their demographic is some insane amount tilting towards female. And there's a certain formula that they know will just the audience loves. And you're absolutely right. It's just, and it has exploded. I mean, look, Dateline has made, in 2020, they've made kind of a cottage industry out of it. And now, interestingly, docuseries started, take a look at Making a Murderer, and then the Scott Peterson documentary, the 6-part series on A&E, which was wildly successful, and now Leaving Neverland, which we talked about. And then, you know, interestingly today, they're talking about the Central Park 5, one that Ava just put out. And, you know, we were talking a little while ago or a couple episodes ago about Ron Sullivan losing his deanship at Harvard. And now today, I think, Gary, you've got, what's the name of the prosecutor on the Central Park 5? She was a professor at, where was it, Columbia?
Yeah, that one was, let's see, there's two women, but this one is named Elizabeth Lederer.
Yeah, I think she was the lead prosecutor on Central Park 5. And now they've kind of drummed her out or made her resign.
Well, let me, hold on. I'm just cutting you okay. off for 1 second, and only because there are things I want Gary, I should learn how to text or something. But Gary, get a head start on looking up the op-ed, I think, in the, Wall Street Journal,
Journal?
Of the Central Park 5 prosecutor or lead detective or whomever it was who was like, hey, you saw this series on Netflix. I was slandered, basically. That's not how it went down.
Yeah, that was Linda Fairstein, who went on, who was head of the unit, supervised the thing, and apparently was in the weeds on the case, and then went on to become a very successful novelist in the genre. And her, one woman who was the line prosecutor, was just dropped from her position or resigned. And Linda Fairstein was pilloried, and her agency, her literary agency, I believe, just dropped her as well.
Well, we're living I'll let him look it up, but we're living in a dangerous place, and I'll tell you what the dangerous place is. The dangerous place is, and it's funny, we're right back to lore. We're right back to Buffalo Bill Cody. Like, he once shot three Indians with one bullet and stuff like that. And it's like, yeah, but we don't have any documentation of that, but the story precedes him. You know what I mean? Right. A lot of those lore. There's a lot of lore out there in a world of computers and affidavits and information. We still have a lot of lore. And so what happens is somebody makes a Netflix, multi-part special. I don't know, Gary, if that was a docu-series or reenactments or was
it's a mini-series.
But with actors?
Yes.
Okay. They make it and
ironically, you want a fun fact? Guess who played Linda Fairstein in the series?
Who?
Lori Loughlin.
Newly minted Felicity Huffman.
Oh, really?
All right.
Felicity Huffman. Okay, so I have a story to tell, and my story is these five poor black boys were railroaded, and I'm going to go out and execute that story. Now, unfortunately, it's based on actual events, and then there's actual people who are still alive who are involved with those actual events. But you have a story, you have a narrative, and you tell that story. Unfortunately, it's going to make some of the people who are still around look really bad. But if it's completely accurate, then it's completely accurate. But if you listen to her side of the story, it seems like there were a lot of things that weren't accurate in the portrayal of her in that story. And obviously, you just got it from the Michael Jackson documentary, right?
Exactly. I just lived the same thing where Dan Reed took my press conference after being wiretapped, basically, by the airplane charter operator, and then who tried to sell the thing. And I gave a press conference after I got a restraining order issued by the judge saying, this how outrageous it was. And they just kind of took that and then conveniently made it that I was threatening the underage complainants in the case. And, so I've lived through it. I've seen it. I'd love to do a deeper dive into this, and I'm going to watch the I think for next week, I plan on watching the series itself. And then I'm going to take a look at some of the things that Fairstein has said, because a lot of that stuff is available and it's not like it requires some heavy lifting. I'd like to try to get a true picture of it. And, you said, remember, you make documentaries, right?
Sure.
So you know better than anybody that it's storytelling. So to some degree. And so I understand taking license with things if you're telling a story, but that's what all storytellers do. But I love this idea that, when I was in college, and I granted that was a billion years ago, instead of just to try to be even-handed, we complained about what Harvard did with Ron Sullivan. I should complain about what they do with a prosecutor here. Back in the day when liberal arts colleges meant critical thinking, wouldn't it have made more sense to just put the two of them onto a stage and have them debate the issues and discuss it that way and have a little intellectual discourse and understand what the criminal justice system's about and that people have roles and that people do whatever they're supposed to do within the ethics and within the guidelines. To me, that would be a lot more educational than running people out on a rail.
Well, there's also this part, and this is where my brain is always at, and nobody likes my setting on my brain. But I'm sorry that this is how I think. People, when they go, these boys were railroaded and accused of crimes they never committed. And now, next thing you know, they're in jail for X amount of years for a crime they didn't commit. And I'm like, I get it. But they didn't pull them out of study hall and arrest them. There was a large group of young boys who'd gathered at the park with like pipes and weapons, and their plan was to assault people, joggers, guys on bicycles and things like that. So maybe we got the wrong five guys. But we did get the right five guys who gathered at a park in a public space to beat and rob innocent people who were jogging and taking their dog for a walk. So we got that part right, right?
Yeah, there's the interesting thing. You know, I often say that in these situations where people are later exonerated or they've been falsely accused in the first place, I don't know that it necessarily evolves or comes from a place of malevolence. I don't think somebody, whether it's a defense lawyer who drops the ball or it's a prosecutor who prosecutes with zeal, I don't know that people are inherently, most people are not inherently evil. I think they get caught up and then they start to believe in kind of the nobleness of their cause. And sometimes that blinds them to what they're doing. And they cut corners or they do things they shouldn't do, or they start to believe their own bullshit.
Well,
I say that with some hesitation, though, because I'm smack dab in the middle of a matter where I'm just every day when I look through the discovery on a case, I keep saying to myself, the prosecutor can't really believe this. I mean, this just makes no sense.
Mark, can I jump in and then we'll get into your story as much as you can talk about your story. And then Gary's found the Wall Street Journal article, I do believe. It's a couple of words there. Gary can read it. But here's what I want to say. Tell me if this is a true statement. Some prosecutors do a thing where they go, I don't know if these guys were involved with this rape or not. I do know these guys showed up to a park with weapons and were planning on assaulting innocent people. That much I know. So whether they're involved with the rape or not, it doesn't matter. They can go away for a long time. Maybe it's longer than they would have gone away for just hitting a guy on a bicycle with a pipe. But still, I'll sleep knowing that they were up to something.
And I think that there is a tendency to do that, whether it's conscious or unconscious. That, ethically, as a prosecutor, that's not the calculus you're supposed to be engaging in. And the defense lawyer is supposed to be there zealously defending. And I've said it before, the prosecutor's got a completely different duty than the defense lawyer does. The prosecutor is supposed to seek justice, and the defense lawyer is supposed to zealously defend within the bounds of ethics. What bothers me is, and I won't name the case because we haven't started trial yet, but we probably will next month. But I've got a case where, I've got representations that are made in a courtroom, and I've basically done the equivalent of calling bullshit on the representations and I won't bore you with the details of it, but I've lived the case and I know the case. So I knew in real time that what was being said was false. The discovery, when it comes in, substantiates what I said, 7-8 months ago. So now I'm saying, were they just sloppy and they don't know what they're prosecuting or they don't know what their discovery is? Or was it something where they just wanted to keep somebody in custody and so they make statements knowing that they're false? Now, if it's the latter, that's unforgivable. You can't make false statements in a courtroom just because you've got an ulterior motive to keep somebody in custody. And the former is not exactly, a reason for the Clarence Darrow Award of humanitarianism. I mean, if you're making statements and you don't know the discovery, and the discovery is kind of the universe of facts that your investigators have assembled, then, maybe you shouldn't be making the statements, or maybe there should be some caveats, because when you're dealing with people's lives, you shouldn't be just going out there and winging it. So, we'll see. I mean, it'll be interesting when we do the case. I'll give you some updates because I think you will find it fascinating on a number of levels, and I'll get into the weeds when we start it.
So, Gary, you have the Wall Street Journal article.
I do. You guys covered it very well. There's a section here I can read.
I'll tease it, and let me first tell you about teencounseling.com. Connect your 13 to 19-year-old with a licensed professional counselor where they can spend their time, and they're not going to spend the time in their office. They do it on the smartphone because that's where your teens are. starts with a short questionnaire, help them understand your teen and their needs. Then you're matched with an available therapist to start communicating within 24 hours. You can review their credentials and directly communicate with the counselor to make sure it's a good fit. It's easy and free to change your counselors if you need to do so. More affordable than traditional counseling, and financial aid is available. Visit teencounseling.com/doubt. Help your teen take charge of their mental health. Boy, it's the mental part now, everyone. We're in the computer age. That's where your kid needs the edge. Reasonable Doubt listeners get 10% off the first month at teencounseling.com/doubt. All right, Gary, what do you got?
All right, I'll just read an excerpt here. The five were charged as accomplices, as persons acting in concert with each other and with the then unknown man who raped the jogger, not as those who actually performed the act. In their original confessions, later recanted, they admitted to grabbing her breasts and legs, and two of them admitted to climbing on top of her and simulating intercourse. Semen was found on the inside of their clothing, corroborating these confessions. Mr. Reyes's confession, DNA match, and claim that he acted alone required that the rape charges against the five be vacated. I agreed with that decision and still do. But the other charges for crimes against other victims should not have been vacated. Nothing Mr. Reyes said exonerated those five of those attacks, and there was certainly more than enough evidence to support those convictions of first-degree assault, robbery, riot, and other charges.
Yeah, there's something in there, Gary, where like one of the guys, it was said that he had a pipe or something and hit somebody with the pipe, and that the injuries were consistent with the pipe that the guy had.
Sure, like, it's right here. Nor does the film note that Mr. Salam took the stand at his trial, represented by a lawyer chosen and paid for by his mother, and testified that he had gone into the park carrying a 14-inch metal pipe, the same type of weapon that was used to bludgeon both a male school teacher and Miss Melly.
Sorry. Look, I don't know. Call me old-fashioned. If you show up to a goddamn park with a pipe to just beat on strangers, I only have so much sympathy for you and your cause. That's me. I'm weird that way.
I get it. I want to read the transcript of this guy's testimony. I find it hard to believe somebody put somebody up on the stand and the guy said, yeah, I went into the park with a 14-inch pipe to beat people. Call me skeptical. I'm going to read the transcript.
At the very top of this op-ed, the victim points directly to the 117-page decision. So that to me means I'm giving a lot of credence to what she says next, because she's saying go to the case file and look at the
right,
raw.
That's what I want to do. It's exactly what I want to do. I'm going to take a look at it. We're going to do a deep dive next week.
Yeah.
My interest this week was just what a perfect bookend to Ron Sullivan in Harvard. If you defend somebody who's wildly unpopular and a pariah,
Weinstein,
you get booted out. Yeah, you get booted out of the liberal arts college. If you're prosecuting somebody and it turns out that they were innocent, you get booted out of college. I mean, it's just an interesting kind of time on both on college campuses. It's just astonishing to me.
I'm interested in your overall gestalt on this. This isn't a case study kind of a situation, but this is just your thinking man who's been around long enough. There's a lot of stuff going on with social media and people being kicked off of this and blocked from that. And there's a lot of stuff going on with the Twitter and the Facebooks and the YouTubes and everything. It strikes me that these guys have made a mistake in taking a stance, in taking a political stance. It strikes me that these guys deciding, we don't like Ben Shapiro, but we do like the Young Turks, was a tactical decision that was a poor decision for them to make. And it's now showing at the beginning, they all said, no, we don't lean one way or the other. We just talk about content. And when the content crosses the line, then we act. Except for all the content that crosses the line is Republican or is conservative. So now they're showing their hand, and now they're getting themselves into a weird position, because they were supposed to just be the phone company. You guys pick up each end of the phone and talk. We don't police it. That's up to you. Now they're policing it. They're policing it one direction. It's becoming pretty clear. Like, there was a guy who blew the whistle for Pinterest because there was some anti-abortion group that was on Pinterest and they were labeling it porn. They've been doing it to Dennis Prager and PragerU. It's crystal clear. If you have your head on a goddamn swivel and you don't just watch Rachel Maddow every night, you will see that these big tech companies are going after conservatives and they're trying to squash their speech. And I think they're worried about the next election. But either way, big picture, they made a bad choice. That's my take.
You know, what also happened this past week, my friend and sometimes co-counsel Harmeet, who, you know, sure. Adam, we've had her on, and Harmeet is an accomplished lawyer and takes on conservative causes and points out sometimes exactly the conundrum you've been talking about. She won an important victory against Google, or at least a preliminary skirmish with Google, allowing it to proceed to discovery. And they're part of the problem. When you start to police speech, obviously there are limits. You know, the old saw, you can't yell fire in a crowded theater, you know, is the kind of the outer limit of speech. But when you start to try to police speech, that's when you run headlong into the First Amendment. And, you know, people, there's, you can say back when I was younger and the big problem was obscenity. I mean, they kept trying to, you know, Larry Flint basically fought legal skirmishes all across the country when they tried to define what pornography was in order to, because that was policing speech, so to speak. And now we do it kind of in almost an ideological way, whether it's somebody who gets shouted down, somebody who gets banned or for whatever else. My feeling is, as long as, and I think the law should be this way, ideally, it's what the framers intended. I mean, if you take a look at historically what the First Amendment, where it came from, it was pretty rough and tumble political discourse. It was not, you know, the Marcus of Queensbury rules of you can't do this, you can't do that, you know. I mean, it was really rough and tumble kinds of pamphleteering and things like that. And the framers wanted to protect that. That was core political speech. And a lot of the stuff that gets banned now strikes me as core political speech.
Well, it is, and I think, again, the problem that they're causing is it's going one direction. They're not going after the left. They're going after the right. And they've shown their hand, and they show it over and over again. And I think, ultimately, it's going to hurt their business and their cause. But you're also going to give... You know, it's sort of like that thing where I'll give you an example. Let's just say there's a movie and the movie has a lot of gay sex in it and whatever. And the Christian right mobilizes and they start protesting. And the next thing you know, box office is through the roof because they got it on the map. You know what I'm saying? Like their protest right. has, you know. Protesting Chick-fil-A has probably sold more units of Chick-fil-A than Chick-fil-A would have sold before the protest. And there's a left version and a right version of that. I believe the reason these guys, the Ben Shapiros or the Dennis Pragers or whomever, are flourishing now is because you sought to silence them. And there's always going to be a pushback. And that's what they've created. They've created a sort of cause celeb. Every single one, every time one of these guys gets yanked off of YouTube or demonetized, Dennis Prager has 100 of his videos that have been pulled off of YouTube or have had the parental consent label on them. 100 PragerU videos. I do one of them. There's no profanity. There's no negative imagery.
Educate me. What is the worst thing that ostensibly, why do they pull it off? What does he say or what is the theme that justifies pulling it off.
Well, this is why it's so egregious. Alan Dershowitz does a 5-minute video of why Israel has a right to exist, and they flag it. Obviously, it's Alan Dershowitz, and there's no pornography, and there's no language, but they disagree with what he's saying. So they pull it.
Wow.
Okay, wow. Look, maybe you're an asshole, and you don't think Israel has a right to exist. Fine. You're not allowed to censor people who disagree with you unless he's saying kill Palestine, which he's not saying. He's just saying Israel has a right to exist. They flag anything that disagrees with them. It's not that you.
I think it's the death of rationality. Actually, it's the opposite of what critical thinking is.
Of course,
it's kind of an argument that you're just homogenizing the ideology.
Gary, you can pull up.
You know what's interesting?
Tell me what they pulled today.
I'd love to see why they're flagging or what the kind of content violation is, what the standard is. There was something that also came out today that's fascinating to me, where the I think it's called the Office of Special Counsel, not to be confused with the special counsel, which was Bob Mueller. But there is something called the Office of Special Counsel, which is like a watchdog protection group for whistleblowers and others. And they came out today and wrote a letter saying that their findings were that Kellyanne Conway, because she commented on Democratic political candidates as she's employed in the White House, should be fired. And this is interesting because I believe, I could be mistaken, but I think that the head of this Office of Special Counsel is a Trump appointee. And he's saying that she violated the Hatch Act by virtue of the fact that she was commenting on Democratic candidates. Now, if that isn't political speech, I don't know what is. And I don't know how you can transform the Hatch Act into attacking political speech because you work in the executive branch.
Well, we're living in very strange times, but I will tell you, ultimately, the powers of the modalities of communication, the folks that used to just kind of control it, the Los Angeles Times, the New York Times, CNN, NBC, they're all losing market share. And they're losing it fast, and they're losing it to voices they can't control. You know, I mean, you think about I was thinking about this the other day. Here's another overall interesting thought for you, Mark Garagus. And Gary's got the list of PragerU videos that have been censored. It's insane. It's insane. It's priests talking about why we need Christianity. But again, if you're hard left, that's hate speech. Sorry, Gary. Give us a couple.
Sure. Are the police racist? A debate about whether or not police target African Americans. Why don't feminists fight for Muslim women? Why did America fight the Korean War? Who's more pro-choice, Europe or America? Let's see. Are 1 in 5 women raped at college?
I'll tell you why.
It's amazing.
All right. Here's the deal. The folks on the left claim that 1 in 5 women are raped at college, but they're saving for college for their 13-year-old girl right now. So you know they're fucking liars. But that's their stats, just like they'll tell you that 53,000 Americans die of secondhand smoke, except for nobody dies of secondhand smoke. But they're allowed to lie for a good cause. This video would debunk their lie, and they don't like it. This video wouldn't have depictions of rape, wouldn't talk about pornography, wouldn't use swear words, but it would make them look like they were wrong, and they don't like that. So they're going to control it, because their narrative is 20% of women who go to college are raped. It's a lie, but it's a lie that they don't want challenged. So here's a way.
Hasn't he challenged? I mean, I suppose he has. I remember he was embroiled in a lawsuit at one point, wasn't he?
Yes, he's challenging them, but if you, I don't know, queue up 1 in 5 women are raped in college. If you can find it, you'll have a thoughtful person give you a thoughtful response as to why that's inaccurate. And it is inaccurate. But you don't want to debate. You want to shut it down. And that's what we're dealing with.
Yeah, I don't. Look, I may disagree with virtually every position he takes on what Gary just read. But I don't the idea that you can censor that is scary.
Well, that's, I mean,
that's what speech is all. That's what the First Amendment and free speech is all about. You're supposed to the one thing you're supposed to be indoctrinated in by eighth grade is the idea that I may not agree with your speech, but I'll fight for your right to express yourself.
Well, let's see who gives the speech, Gary. Sorry.
Sorry, I can't really see from here. But I'm sure they'll introduce.
Well, we'll hit play and we'll listen to a few minutes.
Are American college campuses rape cultures? Are they dangerous places where sexual assaults against women are happening at an alarming rate? According to many gender activists, academics, and politicians, the answer is yes. Here's what the Vice President of the United States, Joe Biden, said in 2014. We know the numbers. 1 in 5 of every one of those young women who is dropped off for that first day of school before they finish school will be assaulted in her college years. Let's take a closer look at the vice president's claim. Rape is a horrific crime, and rapists are rightfully despised. We have strict laws against sexual assault that everyone wants to see enforced. But while rape is certainly a very serious problem, there's simply no evidence of a national campus rape epidemic.
You get dropped off?
Sorry, can you hear that?
I heard her, rapists are rightfully despised, and then it went dead.
Oh, I see. Well, let's see if it picks up again. I'll try it again. Sorry.
Certainly no evidence that sexual violence is a cultural norm in 21st century America. In fact, rates of rape in the U.S. are very low, and they've been declining for decades. Why would it be any different on a college campus? Where, then, does the 1 in 5 rate that Vice President Biden cites come from? Well, it turns out it comes from a study conducted over the Internet at 2 large universities, one in the Midwest and one in the South. The survey was anonymous, no one's claims were verified, and terms were not clearly defined. In round numbers, a total of 5,000 women participated. Based on their responses, the authors, not the participants, determined that 1,000 had been victims of some type of non-consensual or unwanted sexual contact. And voila. From one vaguely worded, unscientific survey, we suddenly arrive at a rape culture on college campuses.
All right. So,
tellingly, this...
All right. So you guys lie, and then you don't like when people poke holes in your lie, so you shut it. You flag it. It's pretty simple. I'm just saying
I don't understand on what basis that could be from a legal perspective. I'm trying to understand how you could take that down. I don't get that.
Oh, there's one. Gary, what is my one? Just telling people who not to vote for?
Correct.
I like the one that mine got flagged just by saying, don't vote for the people who tell you they're going to do the most for you. They're going to do the least. You got to take care of your own shit. I just love that that's some sort of political dog whistle. Now, look, I know it's a lie because you wouldn't send your girl to college if you thought there was a 1 in 5 chance she was going to get raped somewhere in those 4 years, or in my daughter's case, those 7 years. Because she's a it's a little bit slower. Oh, my God. If my daughter goes to college for 8 years, now she has a 50% chance or 40% chance of getting raped. I never did the math on this. My mom went to L.A. Valley College for like 16 years, so she probably had 147% chance of being raped. Although if you looked at her at the time, I don't know. I'm sorry, Mark. Did you have something you wanted to say?
I've got to educate myself on the ability to just flag something in this area, because I do not think that it would survive any kind of a constitutional challenge. I don't understand how it's possible that you would be able to. I know that Congress has got constantly evolving on this, so to speak. But it strikes me as that it's there's nothing that you look at with stricter scrutiny under constitutional principles than core political speech. And this seems to be core political speech.
Do you have Dershowitz? What did Dershowitz talk about, Gary? The point is the guys who are running these companies are hard left liberals, and it's bleeding through their practices. It's super clear for anyone who pays attention to this stuff. This does not happen to the Young Turks or the Huffington Post. Like, it doesn't happen to them. It happens to PragerU because he's conservative and he's religious. That's how it works. And we're sitting around scratching our heads going, well, wait, there was no profanity, or wait, nobody crossed the line, or nobody suggested violence. Right. It doesn't take that. They don't like him because he's conservative. That's the part that we should all be scared of. And here's the problem, Mark. The problem is most people aren't wired like you and Alan Dershowitz. They don't say, well, I'm not conservative, and I don't agree with many of the things he says, but I certainly agree with people's right to express their opinion. Oh, no. Most of the country goes, I disagree with that guy, and I'd like him shut down. That's how it works.
Well, that's the right. And that's the, to my mind, that's the scary part. You're going to start shutting down voices you don't want to hear or don't agree with. Then, you know, that's, you know, George Orwell. When was 1984 published? 1949? Boy, the guy was spot on as to where we were headed. That is intellectual hypocrisy. You can't do that. Well, I mean, you can't do that in a constitutionally protected environment. Well, I mean, that just makes no sense. I understand if you want to protest and do an economic boycott, I get that. You can vote with your purchasing power. I get divestiture, and I get those kinds of protests. But the idea of running somebody out on a rail from their job because you don't agree with them, or taking them, you know, look, we're in a different era. We no longer have a soapbox in the middle of the town. We have platforms that are and communications that are over the internet, and whether it's Twitter or Instagram or YouTube, those that happens to be the level of discourse, or the method, I should say, of discourse. And that still has to comply with the First Amendment. You don't get a First Amendment exception for I don't agree with you.
Well, there's a couple of things I want to dive into it in a second. And first off, yes, George Orwell should get some credit for predicting 1984, although I should get all the praise for writing in 50 years we'll all be chicks. Because I saw that one coming, and that happened a lot faster than George Orwell. There is some possible riding of the ship. Gary, maybe you can find Dershowitz on Prager, and
On Prager U, or are you referring to like a
Dershowitz on Prager U? Yeah.
Yeah, I think he has a few.
I think one of his is why Israel has a right to exist or something. But anyway, another one that was flagged. I'll tell you, and you tell me what you think of this in a second. There's a possible way to right this ship. First, LegalZoom. Halfway through the year here, it's never too late to start accomplishing things. Like, man, for me, I made a New Year's resolution to go out and start doing stand-up a few times a week. And I've been doing it.
I've noticed that.
And I love it, man. It feels great. So get out there. It's still, you got another half of the year to make up for the first half. So it's easier when someone helps. That's why LegalZoom is extending their friends and family discount to everyone right now for a limited time. Get 10% off of all the things you need to do on your things to do list. So if you want to start a business, or you want to save on an LLC or DBA or an S corp or more, also you can secure peace of mind by wrapping up that last will and testament. and Living Trust as well. Put it to LegalZoom and don't put it off anymore. LegalZoom's not a law firm, but if you have legal questions and they're holding things up, they have a network of independent attorneys who can give you advice. Right, Gary?
That is absolutely right. Don't wait any longer to get started on your goals this year. Visit LegalZoom.com now and save 10% with LegalZoom's friends and family discount. Just be sure to enter code DOUBT in the referral box at checkout. This offer is only available for a limited time, so hurry to LegalZoom.com now and use code DOUBT for 10% off. LegalZoom.com, LegalZoom, where life meets legal. Now, Ace Man, one of his videos that comes up the most is titled, Are Israeli Settlements the Barrier to Peace?
Okay.
You want to check out some of that?
Was it flagged?
Does that get flagged?
I would have to confirm, but I'm pretty sure probably.
Yeah, because you can't say anything pro-Israel. That'll get you flagged, too. Alan Dershowitz can't say anything pro-Israel. All right. We'll play a snippet of it, and then I have a question for you that might right this ship.
Actually, we're going to play Israeli's Legal Founding, which is also him and is definitely flagged. So I'd rather play one I know for sure.
All right, everyone. This is flagged. This will fall under the same heading of pornography so that your kid can't be exposed to it and it can't be showed on public libraries. There we go.
Of all the countries that have come into existence in the last century, no country's birth certificate is more legitimate than that of Israel. One reason is that many of the men who founded the country, Theodore Herzl, Zeb Jabotinsky, David Ben-Gurion, Menachem Begin, Yitzhak Shamir, were either lawyers or had legal training. They were obsessed with making it legal. Unlike almost every other country, lawyers, not generals, were the midwives of Israel's birth, or more accurately, rebirth, since it had existed as an independent country twice before in history. Step by legal step, Israel moved legally toward nationhood from the Balfour Declaration in 1917 to the San Remo Agreement in 1920 to the League of Nations Resolution in 1922 to the Anglo-American Convention on Palestine in 1924 to the partition of land ordained by the United Nations in 1947 into a nation state for the Jewish people and an Arab state. Yet immediately upon its lawful establishment in 1948 as the nation state of the Jewish people, Israel was illegally attacked by all the surrounding Arab states, as well as by elements of the local Arab population. In defending its right to exist during that war, Israel lost 1% of its population, including many civilians and Holocaust survivors. It also lost some of the land assigned to it by the United Nations. It captured other land from the aggressors that was originally assigned to the Arab state. The end result of that war against Israel was an armistice line that prevailed until 1967, when Israel was once again attacked by Jordan during Israel's war with Egypt and Syria. Between 1948 and 1967, despite the armistice...
All right, so maybe you disagree with Dershowitz's thoughts on Israel, but do we need to flag that?
It could almost be a Wikipedia entry. I don't even understand. How could that possibly be flagged? He's citing to historical treaties, conventions, and history. And how is that? That's incomprehensible.
Well, here's how it can be flagged. I'm progressive. I don't like Israel. And I run the tech company. So that's how it works.
I'm surprised Alan hasn't challenged that.
Well, Dennis is. So here's my last question to you, Mark. I would say, and I'm not a litigious guy, and you know me, I despise attorneys, but
great.
Let me give you some love here. Whether it's Nicholas Sandman, who is like suing CNN and everyone else for essentially turning him into a pariah through some creative editing with him on the steps and the American Indian gentleman in front of him, there's a bakery. I can't think of it, Gary, but there's a bakery that just won a multi-million dollar lawsuit against a college who accused them of being racist and being racist towards some black kids.
Oberlin College, right?
Yeah. Okay. Now, because a couple of black guys came in, stole a bottle of wine, the guy chased him out and grabbed him. Next thing you knew, Oberlin was boycotting the bakery. There were groups of people with bullhorns out front. They sued Oberlin because Oberlin was wrong. There was no racism there. And Prager is going to sue because they shouldn't be flagged. And Harmeet is like representing that engineer for Google who was fired for no fucking reason. Unfortunately, we have to sue. We have to sue all these people. And once they get sued, once the colleges get sued, once Google gets sued, once these big platforms get sufficiently sued enough, then they're going to have to stop before they shut down somebody they disagree with.
Well, I mean, the Harmeet's client, if you dive into that case, it's that scary. That's so scary. I mean, that talk about policing thought. I mean, the guy writes a memo and you don't agree with it. And so then you fire him because he writes a memo. I mean, it's just it's stunning to me.
But think how drunk with power you have to be. Meaning, I'm the boss, you're the boss. If somebody came into my office and said, hey, we got to fire Hank because he wrote something that we disagree with, I'd be like, did he threaten anybody? No. Did he use a bunch of profanity? No. I'd go, well, then we can't fire him because he's going to sue us for wrongful termination. How drunk with power do you have to be to go, well, that guy wrote something that we disagree with? Get rid of him. Just get rid of. And then when you give your reason for firing him, you ironically set the table. Like here at Google, we welcome a diverse opinion. We welcome. Oh, really? You just fired a guy who disagreed with you. How do you write that in your how's that your mission statement after you fire the guy for disagreeing with you? It's insanely arrogant. Yes.
I think we ought to invite whoever's Google's, I'm sure they've got some PR flack or some person who likes to put a spin on this. And I'd like to just hear their position. I'd like to ask some questions, do a mild, you know, engagement. I won't call it a cross, but I'd like to hear the position as to why a free exchange of ideas is a bad thing.
They would have answers that would not hold up to your scrutiny or secondary questions. They have statements they could make, and a lot of diversity, a lot of we value the opinion of blah, 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 a lot of safety and a lot of community bullshit talk. But they certainly wouldn't work if you were in the same room. Inclusion. Nothing would work if you were in the same room with these people for 6 minutes because they could not answer any follow-up questions you had. Why do you need to fire an engineer because he writes down something that, by the way, is factually correct, but you don't like the facts?
Well, even if it isn't factually correct, if it's a reasoned opinion, what is the problem? Even if it's somewhat unhinged, what's the problem?
My point is our friend Harmeet is going to sue these guys. The school got sued. Google's going to get sued. They'll be sufficiently sued enough. So at a certain point, when the guy walks into the boss's office and said, hey, some engineer wrote something that we politically disagree with, the guy's going to go, I wish we could shit can his ass, but we can't. We're going to get sued.
Well, yeah, and you know what will happen? A couple more big verdicts, and then the insurance companies will start telling these guys, hey, you want to go down that road, that's fine, but we're not insuring you for it. That's generally how it works. I mean, it's for all the people who get mad over trial lawyers or people who do these kinds of things, that's the reality of corporate America. I mean, corporate America is and will do whatever they think they can get away with until somebody sues them, holds them accountable. Then the insurance company says, what the hell are you doing? We're not going to insure you going forward. And then some risk manager will say exactly what you just said, Adam. No, we're not firing somebody because he expressed an opinion. Remember that $20 million verdict? This $10 million verdict?
Yeah,
exactly. It's what it takes.
James Damore, I think his name was, that Harmeet represents, just wrote a sort of thoughtful piece about why there are more male engineers than female engineers, and they just shit-canned him.
And by the way, there was a couple pages in there about how Google might go about changing that if that was what they wanted.
Which is just like, What are you? I don't understand. Isn't that what you want out of somebody?
No. No. We have an opinion. We have a political opinion. And if you dare bump up against that, we will fucking bully your ass. We'll pound your ass. All we talk about is diversity and diversity of opinion, except for we will accept no diversity of opinion. Their idea of diversity of opinion is you agree with us whole cloth. All right. I know you got one more piece of business
I got one thing to say. Well, do you know what I got? TrueCar.
Yeah.
60 seconds. It's exactly how long this commercial lasts. Isn't that amazing? You know what else you can do in about a minute? And I did this recently. Get an offer for your car with TrueCar. That's right. The amount of time it takes to floss your teeth, pet your dog, do a few sit-ups or push-ups, listen to my voice, Adam's voice, Gary's voice. You can get a true cash offer. Best of all, you can do it from your smartphone, where we all exist, or home. Just go to TrueCar, enter in your license plate number, and watch your car, how your car's details pop up. Answer a few questions, and you'll get an accurate TrueCash offer from a local TrueCar certified dealer. Could that be any easier? After that, you can bring your car in. They'll check it out with you together. You can ask questions. You get the answers you need. There's no surprises. It's not like we have to do mental jujitsu. It's pretty simple. Then you simply leave the place with your check or trade in your car and get a new ride. So when you're ready to experience a better way to sell or trade in your car, check out TrueCar today.
All right. You can see me tonight. I'm at Denver Comedy Works South doing two shows. I think the first show is sold out, but the late show still has some tickets. So come on out, say hi. And I got live shows coming up in Portland, July 19th and 20th at Helium Comedy Club. And just go to adamcarolla.com for everything you need, not Taco Bell material. My stand-up special is available. You just Google that shit. And what do you got, Mark?
I got the Capri in the Hamptons is up and running. And Brooklyn Chop House is stopped by there to the restaurant, which is the pop-up this summer. The Palm Springs, go down there and sweat out the toxins. Or you could stop by if you're in New York, go to Grand Central Terminal to Prova Pizzeria or over to the Moxie Hotel in Times Square with our second location of Prova. Or if you're in L.A., Downtown Engine Company 28 or 10E Mediterranean Tapas.
And check out 22 Hours, an American Nightmare, new podcast on Podcast One and Apple Podcasts. Until next time, this is Adam Carolla from Mark Garagus saying mahalo.
Thanks for listening to Reasonable Doubt. Tune in next Saturday for an all-new episode. This is Corolla Digital.